This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're going over Four Weddings and a Funeral, episode duh. So, if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? For one dry kiss. Are you ready for one dry kiss? Nah, 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 nah. And we do have to say, if you have not heard the first episode of Four Weddings and a Funeral, we greatly encourage you to go back and listen to that one, or else this one may not make a whole lot of sense.
We're doing a limited series. It's 10 parts. It's on Hulu. Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Four Weddings and a Funeral. Bot, bot, do. And as always, welcome to One Dry Kiss, our lovely, irreverent love letter to rom-com series this time around. And I am here with my lovely co-host, who I wish I could go to her wedding way more than I wish I could go to her funeral, Corinne Edding.
Oh my God. Same girl, same with Tamara Koseo.
You can't just jump on my description like that. It took me 2 whole seconds to think that up.
Wow. Mm. And it took me 1 whole second to think up my response. So, I bet you, the gentle listeners, are wondering, what the hell did Tamara and Corinne do on their vacation away from us? Because everything should revolve around us, and generally speaking, we agree. Yes. But did we do anything, Miss Tamara?
I did a whole lot of nothing, which was fabulous. And I did get a lot of work done on my portfolio, but this is an ongoing saga. I swear to goodness, nobody knows. Instead of just having one project where you just put a pretty picture up and just show it to somebody and be like, hey, do you want to hire me? It's a process where you have to show your work, explain your work, support your work, have tertiary projects around your work, and then do it times 6, all while creating a website around it that is aesthetically pleasing and will also get you a job. I equate it to trying to work out after running a half marathon, because every day I go to work and work 8 hours for my lovely boss and do graphic design work nonstop, and then trying to come home and do it afterwards is pressing and trying. And I've gotten a lot more done since I haven't had podcast dealios to do.
Yes.
But it is still the ongoing saga that is my my future career and my newfangled portfolio. So that's what I did. Super exciting, I know. Corinne, you go ahead and tell us what you did, and I'll try to think of something more interesting to add on to that.
Okay, so while you were lounging around looking beautiful, I...
Bite your tongue, woman.
You're not beautiful. I'm sorry.
Was not lounging around.
You said you were lounging around being lazy, and then you also said you were working on your portfolio.
Uh-huh. The lounging was like small snippets in between working on the portfolio and my full-time job, mind you. So I sat down for half an hour and watched something on TV. I would not say it's lounging around. That is my equivalent of doing nothing, but whatever, whatever. Anyways, back to Corinne.
So I went on a little over a week-long road trip with my parents because my boss man was going on a cruise. And so I was like, what's more fun than, you know, hitting the road with the parents, doing a variety of camping, dealing with meeting different parental friends and meeting up and staying with family for several days. Super relaxing, super chill. Oh, and by the way, your mom is going to have like post-COVID lungs and ultimately get altitude sickness and heat exhaustion. So you'll need to go to the emergency room to make sure that she's not dying. Okay, that's cool.
Fine.
Chill, chill, chill. Yeah. So I did that. Also, I have started my summer of declutter. And part of it was spurred on by this couch that I bought that's glorious and blue and lovely. And then I was like, I had a vision for my apartment and I was like, I need to achieve this vision. And so part of it is through decluttering. And part of it is because I've been living in my apartment for 20 years and it's just like time to declutter. And then I ended up getting these 2 chairs, pretty nice and comfortable chairs. Like, they have a cute little modern aesthetic. What I didn't realize, it was between 2 different chairs. There was a big sale. I ended up making myself go poor, but, like, I will recover from it. However, it was between two different styles of tears, and I ended up getting one style because it had a slightly smaller frame. I should have gone for the other style because this style has vampire killing pointy arms on it.
Oh my God, show me now. Turn your camera around so I can see it.
All right. Just a second. I'm picking you up.
Hello, Corinne's boobies. Oh my God. Those arms are a fucking weapon. If you fall in your apartment towards that chair, you could impale yourself and die.
Yes, that's why if there's a vampire that comes over, I can just push them on a chair and they will turn into dust. So, yay.
You almost need to childproof those corners and you don't have any chillins.
I know. Well, I had a friend over and I was like, if there are any kids that come over, I'm going to need to buy tennis balls to put on the ends of these so that they don't hurt anyone.
They are very sharp. Very, very sharp.
Very, very sharp. Very, very pointy.
Speaking of your parents' road trip, when I was telling you about my cousin's reunion, I mentioned it in our last episode, and I was like, oh yeah, my cousin's reunion, blah, blah, blah. And we were joking around, and I was mentioning that Corinne should come with me, and she goes, yeah, I think that's appropriate because I'm practically family, right? And I was like, yeah, yeah, you totally are. And then took a few beats and then be like, wait a second, what about that road trip with you and your parents that I didn't get invited to? I'm practically family. I'm Bramara, remember? Bramara?
You are Bramara. Did you really want to go on a week-long road trip with me and my parents?
I would have at least liked to have been asked.
Oh, I'm excited for sharing a tent with you, Tam.
I have my own tent and I could have met you somewhere. I didn't have to go the whole time and the whole way with you.
I am more than happy to invite you on our next camping trip. They would be delighted to have you, as would I. Bramara.
You said that was probably going to be your last Edding big camping trip, though. So that's...
Well, you big road trip, but my parents are still hitting the road and doing some camping, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just popped into my head, so I'm like, oh, Corinne was trying to insert herself into my family, proclaiming that she was family. And I was like, wait. Wait, did you not just go on a fun-filled Edding? Well, fun-filled in quotation marks.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Fun-filled Edding field trip that included, oh, I don't know, a relative passing away, meeting various family members, and taking your mother to the emergency room.
Yes.
Sounds like a real, real good time.
I know. I know how to have a good time. I was glad that we got to see the relative that was dying before she passed, but and visit the family, because that was meaningful, but was not like a super fun way to spend my vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Just gonna put that out there.
I know. I still think I have some vacation days that I might need to use. Oh,
hi.
I don't know if my...
You can always come up here. Hi!
Because my review is August 1st, and I think that's when my vacation days re-up, but I don't know if my previous vacation days roll over because they're stupid and weird.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And my boss says that there are personal days that count as either vacation, holiday, or sick days. You pick however you want to choose them.
Fuck off
so,
with that.
Yeah. Yes. And before I was like, okay, well, I knew holidays were rolled over if you didn't use them, but sick days did not. So I'm like, is this just a weak ploy to get me to lose my holidays if I don't use them? But boy howdy, I'm going to find that out tomorrow. And if they don't roll over, guess he's going to be not feeling good in the next week or so.
Yes. And then visit me. Hi.
Then nobody heard that. No. Don't say anything if you see my boss. Anyways. Okay. So we must reiterate that we are doing 4 weddings and a funeral. And
yes.
Corinne, would you be so kind as to synopsize, a.k.a. last time on 4 weddings and a funeral, us?
You know, I would, and I will read what you wrote, but I'm just going to put it out there that maybe you had very little trust in me because... I'm so bad at doing the synopsis that you just decided to do it for me. So thank you.
Or perhaps it's because this is the first time or second time we've done something like this and I don't have the flow of it quite yet. So I did a last time before I did the outline without realizing, oh shit, that's basically like the synopsis. Oh crap, I already did it. Here, Corinne, here's the lovely gift I wrapped up in a pretty little bow for you, which is less work, not that I do not trust you.
Well, thank you. I will read it. Synopsis, aka last time on Four Weddings and a Funeral. Let's meet our players again, shall we? We have Maya, who finally had it up to here with her married boyfriend, because not only was he cheating on his wife, he was also cheating on her, the nerve, with the family dog walker. And if that wasn't complicated enough, Maya traveled to her best friend Ainsley's birthday party, met a bronze Henry Cavill, and caught the feels, not knowing that he was Cash, Ainsley's boyfriend. But Maya wisely kept her feelings to herself because her love life was complicated enough and she loves her bestie. Mm. Next, we have Craig, the playboy, who finally decided to settle down with his girlfriend, Zara. Zara moved in and while picking out her boyfriend's outfit for the day, as requested per him, while he goes out and runs with Maya, she finds a necklace with an M on it. She incorrectly thinks Craig was cheating on her with Maya, but no. Craig just found out he has a daughter and is keeping it from Zara. Dun, 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 dun. While trying to figure out if he wants to be a dad. Dun, 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 dun. Then there's Duffy, who's had feeling for Maya for 10 years since college, but has never had the cojones to tell her. What the fuck, Duffy? What the fuck? At Ainsley's 30th birthday bash, he decided to proclaim his love, but gets stood up by Maya, who's oblivious to his feelings. And before we get to the finally that Tamara ended things on, I, Corinne, must add in that there's a bestie battle going on. Yes, Ainsley, who is college besties with Maya, is across the street besties with Gemma. Gemma is very competitive over Ainsley's friendship and has obviously not watched Wreck-It Ralph 2, which helps explain how you don't need to compete with other friends. Instead, Gemma takes every opportunity to cut down Maya and prove she's the better friend. Finally, there's Ainsley, who proclaimed that she's not trying to move too fast with Cash, her beau, but at the end of the last episode, we see them standing in front of the altar, about to get married. But Cash does not utter those two words, I do. Instead, he asks to speak to Ainsley privately in the middle of their wedding vows. And that's where we're picking up, folks, for episode 2, part 2 of Four Weddings and a Funeral.
And we're back at the church. Cash, as discreetly as he can, in front of a church full of people, leads Ainsley away from the altar for a, quick word. He admits that he can't marry her. Ainsley tries to convince him that it's just cold feet. She had the same feelings last night and went down a rabbit hole questioning whether you should screw one person for the rest of your life and how she's never even slept with a Greek guy, which could have been cool. Little do the couple know that the church has great acoustics and the whole congregation can hear every word. Ainsley urges him, just marry me. You love me. Just marry me. Cash tries to repeat the mantra but can't say the word love. Aww. And apologizes profusely. His sorry is heartfelt but is met with a right uppercut across the chin from Ainsley before she rushes out of the church in a huff.
In a huff.
Followed closely behind by her dueling besties, Gemma and Maya. We cut to 1 week later. Ainsley is an emotional puddle on her bed, while Maya and Gemma mill about throwing all of Cash's belongings into a donation box. Ainsley is lamenting on why she got left at the altar. Was it her fault? She hasn't heard from Cash that whole week and wants to know what happened. Gemma, in an attempt to cheer her up, suggests that they have their weekly game night like usual. Maya objects, knowing that Ainsley will not want to throw a party in her current state. But Ainsley is surprisingly game. A party would be a perfect distraction, but she has 300 apology notes to write and has to drop off Cash's belongings to his father's house. Gemma volunteers to write the apology notes. She does have a master's in calligraphy, after all. What the fuck is a master's in calligraphy?
I was like, of course she does. She who does not work because she's too devoted to her child, who's in boarding school, has a master's in calligraphy.
which just sounds like the equivalent of penmanship in elementary school on a college level. So how hard is that? Anywho, Gemma also nominates Maya to drop Cash's belongings off, and Ainsley loves this idea in spite of Maya's protests and reminds her friend, it would be easiest for you. You hardly knew him. So Maya reluctantly agrees.
In Craig's neck of the woods, he is going out for his morning run, but this time Zara is suspicious. She reminds him, but we had plans to whiten our teeth together. Craig doesn't recall that, so Zara asks, Alexa, plans for today. Alexa responds, 11 a.m., teeth whitening with Craig. 1 p.m., go through Craig's wallet. Zara fumbles to turn off Alexa's telling itinerary, and Craig takes the opportunity to duck out.
He needs to stay. The couple that whitens their teeth together stays together.
Stays together? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously. Craig heads straight to the park where he watches his daughter Molly once again play soccer. As fate would have it, Molly accidentally kicks the soccer ball out of bounds and straight towards Craig. They have a short and sweet kicking back and forth game before Julia, Molly's mom, interrupts and sends her daughter back to her game. Craig attempts to play it off. I just happened to be in the park running and coincidentally saw Molly. But Julia's not buying
it. Yeah. Is he here?
Just a single man creeping around in the bushes.
Around a group of kids.
Totally normal, totally natural, right?
I know that sweet back and forth kicking thing, because we know what's happening and we know who he is. But if you were on the outside looking in and see a grown-ass stranger man kicking a ball to a little girl, I'd be like, danger, danger.
Seriously.
Don't you talk. Stranger danger. Run away, Molly, run away.
100%. And Julia is not buying the whole I was just running by story, shockingly. She, like, fucking stranger dangers that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
She knows he's been standing there for 40 minutes because all the other moms are starting to think he's a, as she said, pedo, a.k.a. pedophile. Craig admits, I wanted to see Molly. He is her dad, after all. Julia relents, but the visits will be on her terms, and she will contact him with the details. He reluctantly agrees.
That's a lot harsher than reluctantly.
I know.
Anybody mm-hmm. that doesn't know.
And leaves. Meanwhile, elsewhere in London, Duffy is heading to class at the boys' school. He is intercepted by a very enthusiastic French teacher named Tabby. She is super cute. She's super short. She has dark brown hair and with like the two little braids that she has like pulled up and tied to the back. So it's like a little crown on her head. And like, I just picture her as being somebody who likes to cosplay as an elf in Lord of the Rings or something like that, right?
Corinne is smitten.
And you know who else is smitten is Tabby. She has hearts in her eyes as she invites Duffy to the student play Angels in America because she has an extra ticket. But Duffy declines. I'm sorry. My friends have this game night they do every other Saturday, so I'm heading into town. Tabby exclaims, I love games. And Duffy, dense, motherfucking Duffy, tells her, you should start a game night with your friends. It's really fun. Oh my God. Duffy! You have this super cute package in front of you. She's looking at you with hard eyes. What the fuck are you doing, dude?
Like the equivalent of crushing on somebody and then being like, oh, yeah, I know this great pizza joint. I love pizza. Okay, here, let me get a pen and paper and I'll write you directions on how to get there later.
Yeah.
Just hit you in the head with the obviousness of her affection, Duffy.
Oof. Oh, Duffy. Tabby's face falls as she finds out about the pizza that she won't get invited to and the game night she won't get invited to. And she agrees half-heartedly that, I'll do that, fucker. Duffy calls out, enjoy the show, as he walks away oblivious, or dare I say it densely, or dare I say, what the fuck, Duffy, really?
At the the same time, on the dodgier end of London, Cash is awoken by his father. Since the wedding fiasco, Cash has taken refuge in his childhood home and is shaken awake from the top bunk bed. Papa Haroon needs milk and laundry detergent and requests Cash go fetch it. Cash declines because he needs to process his feelings. Papa insists because his son hasn't been out of the house since the very public humiliation of his wedding. Bad exact words. And Cash is totally capable of processing his feelings at the Tesco's. So get on out of there. Haroon also urges his son to reach out to Ainsley and apologize and give her an exclamation as to why he left her at the altar. But Cash declines. He hasn't figured it out himself. Later that day, Maya stops by with Cash's things. She tries to stealthily drop the items off at the porch, but her phone pings, and she is confronted by Papa Haroon, who thinks she is his Amazon package thief. She explains that she's Ainsley's friend from the wedding, well, the almost wedding, and she's just dropping off his son's items. Haroon does a complete 180, apologizes, and insists she come inside to watch an episode of Mastermind and eat some French bread pizza. The French bread pizza only comes in pack of fours, and there's only three of us, so you have to. It's your obligation now. Maya declines because her cab is waiting, but right when she walks towards it, the driver inexplicably drives away, so she reluctantly agrees. When she goes inside, Cash is super surprised to see her in his family's living room, and the tension is palpable. It's only relieved by Maya and Cash simultaneously answering all of the Mastermind quiz questions correctly. It's as if they're in sync. Aww. Haroon and Asif, Cash's little 12-year-old brother, are quite taken with Maya by the time her Uber arrives. And as she leaves, Cash follows her out. Actually, I have to say, his little brother, I didn't put this in the outline, but Asif is so gosh darn adorable, because when she gets up to leave, he stands up and says, "Please don't let my brother's actions be a reflection on this family. And feel free to follow me on Instagram." He's just like this little showman. I was like, oh my bloody hell, you are a 30-year-old in a 12-year-old's body.
Oh, and he is full on putting the moves on her, too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Cash is like, quit it. Quit it. Quit it. Stop making googly eyes at this girl. Anyways, when Maya goes to leave, Cash follows her out and asks how Ainsley is. Maya's sunny disposition darkens as she tells him, "How do you think she is? She's heartbroken. Why haven't you called her?" Cash gives some half-ass apologies, but Maya is still Ainsley's bestie and will have none of it and goes to leave.
Mm-hmm. Back at Ainsley's. Ainsley's still trying to speckle together some sense from the broken pieces of her obliterated love life. She stalks Cash's Instagram, mulls over his previous posts, sniffs his body-scented butt. His body-scented body wash.
It's really for the body because it says so twice. Body-scented body wash.
I don't want body-scented body wash, though. That's just like, hey, try out this new body wash. It'll make you smell like armpit odor. Ooh, please, let me just rub that all over me.
Have you ever wanted the spicy essence of BO, but don't know where to get it? Try our body-scented body wash.
It's a one dry kiss special. If you call now, you can receive two for the price of one.
That's because we can't sell any. And as an added gift, we'll give you some Punani scented perfume. Huh?
Ooh.
Huh? All the bodily odors in one place.
Mm. Good times.
Or bad times if you wear these things.
And if you feel like you're wanting a little extra spice in your life, we have dirty hair scented shampoo.
And the opposite of dry shampoo. Is your hair too illustrious and bouncy? Do you need it to be oily and stuck to your head? Try our opposite of dry shampoo. It's obvious here at One Dry Kiss, we don't know how to run a business because we're trying to sell you shit that you do not want.
Shit that smells like shit.
Shit that smells very bad.
Oh. So Ainsley actually sniffs his scented body wash longingly before deciding to return to work. Later that day, she enters her posh Ainsley Designs interior. I'm just just full of the word wisdom today, apparently. Interior decorating
and
store.
And we're all the better for it, Corinne. Your word flubs are magic.
Thank you. I'm sorry to say. Thank you. I live to give. And she's met by her two assistants, both named Tony, and proclaims confidently, "The bitch is back." Both Tonys wonder if she's returned too soon, but she pish-poshes their concerns. And Tony 1 is like, "I'm so glad you're back. He makes me show up to work at 10 and work until 5. And Tony 2 is like, "That's because those are our hours."
Mm-hmm. I wonder who's the better employee. Let's think about this for a second, shall we?
I'm just not sure how that should work, you know?
Mm. To actually be there during business hours?
I just like to show up, you know, like, I'm supposed to show up at 1, but really I like to show up at 3:30 for my job, you know?
Oh, that sounds so familiar, goddammit. Hence the conversation we're not having on air, but Corinne, I'm glad you listened to me.
I do. I love you. Ainsley swears that the best medicine for her is throwing herself into her work. She quickly regrets that decision, though, after a newlywed couple comes in, seeking her services to decorate their marital home and make it as beautiful as their love for each other.
Oh, gag. Gag, gag, gag.
Ainsley struggles with their blatant happiness shoved in her face, especially when the wife announces that they have to be wary of sharp edges. They will not be buying my vampire-killing furniture that I did not realize that I was purchasing at the time. Thank you. Because she's pregnant. This sends Ainsley into a spiral, and she ends the day lounging on a couch in tears. Tony, too, finds her and attempts to comfort her, but the not knowing is killing her. She admits, "Every time I had a breakup, I knew why. Mooch, possessive, kisses mom on the mouth, is Russell Brand. But this time, I just don't know." Tony, too, says, in a telling way. Ainsley questions him. "Why are you saying, like that? That's the same way you agree with me when I say I'd look good with bangs, which I would." Tony tries to give her a real, real talk and explains that when he was 14, he was madly in love with George Michael and knew everything about him, thought they were soulmates. But he knew more about George Michael, whom he never met, than Ainsley knows about Cash, she objects. But Tony points out that for his last birthday, she got Cash whiskey stones and an iPad, which are great impersonal gifts for a father-in-law, but not a boyfriend. He presses her to tell him what she really loved about Cash. And when she flounders, she realizes that maybe there's something to his observation, because her reasons are he's cute and he's nice.
The sex is great.
Yeah, the sex is great, which, you know, I mean, there's something to be said for that, but that does not necessarily make a relationship.
Or at least not a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships cannot be built on good sex alone.
No, but it can be an excellent friends with benefit type situation.
Across town, Craig eagerly awaits Julia's arrival in the British Museum, where he agreed to meet her. He seems somewhat surprised that she arrives alone before she explains that she picked this location so that he won't make a scene. Craig admits it might be hard because, you know, American talking is the equivalent to British yelling. Mm-hmm. And right on cue, a museum patron, "Shh," says him. Julia quietly explains that if he wanted to be a father, he should have shown up 5 years ago when she was pregnant instead of now. Ooh. She contacted him last year for medical information and nothing more. Craig argues that he didn't know she was pregnant, and she scoffs, reminding him that she called him and said they needed to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Craig admits that he thought she wanted to start dating and he wasn't ready for a commitment. Julia angrily proclaims, "Parenthood is the ultimate commitment, you ass!" and then slaps a folder into his hand. It's legal paperwork relinquishing his parental rights. Craig is surprised that she took the time to go see a lawyer, and she informs him that she is a lawyer, a very good one, and expects the papers to be signed by Monday. She walks away as Craig balks, loudly, only to be shushed again. I have to say that this part I do agree with Craig. Because, Julia, yes, you said that you needed to talk, but you did not clarify why you needed to talk. Mm-hmm. So just saying that when I summons you, you come like this without letting him know that you're pregnant is kind of an asshole move.
Yes, absolutely. I understand why sometimes people who get pregnant do not notify the father. That, mm-hmm. However, if you're going to bring said person into your life, do not blame them for not being part of the child's life when you have not told them.
There is a child.
Yes.
Yeah. That's where I'm like, Julia, you're a little bit of an asshole. On the asshole scale, you're a little bit of an asshole.
Yeah.
If you were on Reddit asking, am I the asshole? The resounding answer would be yes.
Yes. Yes, you are. Yeah. Back on the dodgier end of London, Cash runs into one of his old friends, Bashir. Bash is thrilled. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy to see you. It's been like forever. Cash apologizes, explaining, I'm back living with my dad right now. Bash nods knowingly. Yeah, you're all everyone in the neighborhood is talking about. We all heard about your wedding, including all your old friends. I mean, we wouldn't know firsthand as we weren't invited, but we know. Cash realizes what a prick he's been, starts giving a half-hearted apology, but Bash enthusiastically tells him, it's all water under the bridge. You can see everyone tonight at my party. It's DJ Four Plays Farewell Bash.
Beep, beep, beep.
Cash chuckles. Yeah, DJ Four Play, because you get everyone hot and bothered before the big event. Bash nods excitedly. You have to come. Cash walks away, giving vague excuses because he has no intention of going. Well, that is until that night when his dad, after telling Cash that he made the right decision because obviously something didn't feel right to him, pulls out the almost 4-hour-long Bollywood movie Lagan to watch for the zillionth time. And Cash's phone pings with a calendar reminder that he should be at Ainsley's house for game night. Cash looks over at the old fuzzy TV, frustrated because his dad gave away the nice new TV to a friend who just moved here from Pakistan and he's missing his wife. When Cash gave it to his dad, who happens to be a nice Pakistani man who misses his motherfucking wife.
I didn't know that Lagan was 4 hours long.
It's like 3 hours and like 70, or not 75 minutes. That doesn't even make sense. 3 hours and like 45 minutes or something like that.
That's the title of this episode, 3 hours and 75 minutes.
It's not 4 hours long. It's over 4 hours long. It's 3 hours and 75 minutes, which is 4 hours and 15 minutes.
That's like saying my child is 52 months old. Over at Craig's house, we realize that Zara is just as bad at communicating as Craig. Instead of confronting Craig about the M necklace that she found, she instead does... Dun, dun, dun. What does she do? Corinne, do you care to make a hypothesis about what this crazy bitch does?
So, Zara, instead of confronting Craig about the necklace?
Yes.
She just pretends like everything is okay.
As one should in a good relationship. Yes, yes. In all good relationships, you just gloss over your problems or shove them deep, deep down until they fester into a explosion that comes up at the most inopportune moments.
Kind of like diarrhea.
No, that's not what happens, but we will find out what she does after the break. And we're back. What Zara does is she barges in on Duffy, who's enjoying a lovely bath in the couple's bathroom. If you think that's weird, it is. But yes. Duffy explains that he only gets to use the boys' very short showers at his school, and sometimes he just needs to feel like a man and be in an adult-sized tub.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to gather the bubbles over his junk while Zara stands over him and interrogates him about whether or not Craig and Maya had a thing in college. Duffy scoffs at this and almost admits that he's the one that has the feelings for Maya, but catches himself before the admission and instead offers that, M could stand for a bunch of other things like Michelle or Megan or a myriad of other M names. This does not comfort Zara, as those could be other women that Craig's cheating on her with. Duffy encourages her to speak to Craig, like we all do, Zara. But she doesn't want to come off like some crazy jealous girlfriend, even though she fully realizes that she's acting like a crazy jealous girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Duffy does the next best thing and offers to speak to Craig himself, but she declines and then hustles out because the bubbles have moved and she can clearly see his penis and wants none of it.
So cute. Mm-hmm. Probably the only thing good about Duffy. I'm guessing he has a big dick.
Big dick Duffy.
Big dick Duffy.
What makes you think he has a big dick?
Because he's tall.
Huh. Yeah. I guess.
Yeah. Back at the house, Cash says to his dad, "Sorry, I actually have plans," and hoofs it over to Bash's party. Bash enthusiastically greets him at the door. "You came, bro. This party's popping." He invites Cash into the house and makes an announcement to the room. "It's my guy, the one, the only, Kashif Khan." Bow, 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 bow. Cash looks around the room, assessing the party of three guys sitting on a couch playing video games and an elderly man napping in a chair. Raising the roof, am I right? The roof, I mean the house is on fire.
Oh, I don't know what I would do if I walked into a quote-unquote party and saw that. I'd be like, well, I don't want to take a nap like this elderly gentleman over here. And the games already seem to be afoot with the three guys playing together. So I'll just stand here quietly by myself.
Yeah.
And they didn't even have good snacks. They had like a half plate full of Cheetos.
Oh, Cheetos are so good, though. But yeah.
You can get Cheetos at home, though, and do your own thing. You don't have to go to a party to get them, or what could be considered a party.
Yeah, but if there's something I know from my high school and college days, there's nothing more exciting than watching boys play video games.
I beg to differ, and I don't think you got out enough during high school.
No, I actually beg to differ as well. And the party, though, however, is not a total bust, because at the end of the evening, Bash brings Cash into his bedroom and reveals the real reason why he invited him over. He produces a VHS tape, but this one has the two friends in their fourth grade production of Oliver Twist. Bashir reminds his friends of what a great actor he was and asks him if he's happy with his life choices. Cash gets a faraway look in his eyes, contemplates all of his unfulfilled dreams, as we all are wont to do, being an actor, and finally has a revelation.
Meanwhile, across town, Ainsley's game night is in full swing, and it's a much more lively soiree than where Cash is.
What?
Maya interrupts the festivities to give a toast, telling the group of friends, "To Ainsley, who's had a terrible week, maybe the worst week a woman could possibly have. Well, outside of any woman born after 1900. But the point is that we love you, we'll help you get through this, and Cash sucks." All the friends raise their glasses and say in unison, "Cash sucks!" In between games, Ainsley finds Gemma chopping vegetables, and what Tony Too said to her is nagging at her conscience, and she asks, "Can I ask you what did you get Quentin, your husband, for his last birthday?" Gemma admits that she got him a paperweight, and Ainsley feels validated. "Ha! Finally, a normal gift." But Gemma clarifies, "Well, it was a paperweight that I carved into a pet tortoise from his boyhood in Kenya." Ainsley's face falls, because this reinforces her assistant's opinion that she really didn't know Cash that well. A little while later on the patio, Craig is filling Maya in on the custody papers and wants her opinion. Maya smartly asks what Zara thinks, and Craig admits that he hasn't told her yet. Maya chastises him for not being open about this very big secret, but he pushes back. "That's why I have friends like you to talk me through these things." She's touched and they hug, not realizing that Zara and Duffy see the exchange through a window and misinterpret the infection and think that maybe there is something else to that damn necklace.
It sounded like you said infection.
Affection. Oh. Misinterpret the affection or the infection. You don't know. Hugging is sometimes contagious.
It is. And I would say if those two were canoodling with each other, there is no way they would be hugging like that in a visible space, like during a friend hangout. I'm just saying is all.
I know they'd be doing it on their jogs away from the prying eyes. People, come on now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Rolling around in the bushes.
Although I do have to say that my sister and I were talking about a Dan situation where he was having a questionable conversation with one of his coworkers when we were all out watching a football game.
Mm.
Saw them and they were talking 15 minutes and he was probably pretty buzzed, which makes him a chatty patty, but still.
Yeah.
They were like chatting it up and I was outside smoking a cigarette. And at first I didn't think anything of it. But after they were out there for well over 15 minutes, I'm like, I'm right here. And yeah. then they shared a very lingering, long hug. And I was still like, I'm still right here. But I don't know if they were oblivious or didn't care. But sometimes I think people are just like, I don't know. Maybe same thing. It was purely platonic and they didn't think anything was wrong with it. But as an observer on the outside looking in, I felt very suspicious.
I would too. That whole situation, which I've never heard of before this moment in time, makes my heart go, what the fuck is going on? What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I think after the fact and with some distance and time between it, that there was a lot of things going on at the end of mine and Dan's relationship where I was like, oh yeah,
yeah,
that's that, huh? Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I left. That's another reason why I left. That's another reason why I left.
You're just like, some people have tarot cards. You're just like flipping over these cards of like, and there's another reason, and there's another reason. Yeah. Little do any of the friends know that all day and well into game night, Maya was getting pleading texts from her philandering ex-boyfriend, Senator McCheaty Pants Ted, wanting to meet so he could explain himself. Like, what explanation? What explanation? I'm sorry.
Oops, I forgot I was married. Gosh darn it. Don't you hate when that happens?
And then my dick fell into my dog walker. I'm not exactly sure how that happened either.
You want to give a dog a bone, but maybe not your dog walker.
Nice. That could be a really good slogan.
That should be Ted's next senator slogan. You want to give your dog a bone, not your dog walker.
Yeah. Hashtag lesson learned, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
Maya finally responds and agrees to meet him, but is caught in the act by Ainsley, who is appalled that her friend would even entertain the notion of seeing that prick. Explains, but he came all the way to London. The least I can do is hear him out. Please don't tell anyone. Ainsley agrees, but when they go back downstairs to finish game night and their last game is verbal charades, aka like password or taboo, Craig, Ainsley, and Duffy take turns pulling clues from a hat and giving clues like, this man is a leech, a politician, adulterer, a philanderer, a total fraud, a senator, a monster, and a total pervert. And all the answers are Ted Spencer, except for the total monster, which was Harvey Weinstein.
And the pervert.
Yeah.
The pervert and the monster was Harvey Weinstein. That was good. So yeah. Like, I get it. It's Ted Spencer. And Duffy meekly says, actually, the last one was Harvey Weinstein. But still, tracks. It still tracks.
I'm like, so the fact that Senator McCheaty Pants was like in alongside Harvey Weinstein. Once Weinstein tells a little something.
Yes, and that you could not distinguish the descriptions between the two also. Very, very problematic.
Mm-hmm. Maya realizes the jig is up. She tells her friends that she's just going to meet him to get closure. I just closure. And everyone is against it, except slightly jealous Zara, who thinks it might be a good idea for her to get back into a relationship thousands of miles away. I'm sure Gemma's like, yeah, I think that'd be a great idea too.
Mm-hmm. Ted doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah. Craig interjects that Maya is way too good for Ted. And lovesick, confused Duffy argues that maybe a platonic friend doesn't need to give relationship advice. As a quick and very sweet side note, Gemma's husband, who very legitimately seems like an absentee, alcoholic, self-centered husband, who an hour or two earlier, when Gemma invites him to game night, he refuses, saying that he'd rather die. But he does ask her not to drink so she can drive him home from the bar later.
What a mensch. Oh my God. Memories.
I know. Speaking of the aforementioned ex, I was
speaking of the aforementioned. Yeah. Oh, God damn.
There's nothing more romantical than that.
Yes. Let's revisit that. When you go down a path that you can't come back from and you're just like, shit.
Fortunately, you did come back from that path and you created a different one.
So just 20 years too late.
Because of this great ask that he did for her, Gemma divulges to the friends at the house party that her husband is useless and couldn't even make it to a party that was literally across the street. But after game night, Gemma comes home to find her husby. Husby? Ding, ding, ding. Another word.
They're coming out of you like shots fired, Corinne.
Oh, it's so good. Her hubby asleep on the couch, a short distance away from the dining room table, where earlier she was painstakingly and immaculately handwriting apology cards. And she sees that he has finished every last one for her while she was out for the evening while drinking hard liquor. So I do wonder what they said, but can't be any worse than Gemma's, who wrote things such as, "The groom acted erratically due to an undiagnosed brain parasite. Thank you for the pumpkin tureen."
I can imagine the many souffles that we would have made in it.
Exactly. So Gemma looked at the completed letters and at her husband with big ol' heart eyes and lays next to him. Like, one of the most romantic things ever. Like, that is the sweetest thing.
Put him in a completely different light, which mm-hmm. is why I felt like I needed to snippet this section and isolate it. You need to know what this guy was like. You thought he was a dumbass alcoholic that fell asleep in bushes and on toilets, but there's also a deeper, softer side to him.
Yes. It's funny because when I was reading the script that you wrote and you cut her writing the letters, that scene, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I wonder if she's going to skip the whole him writing the letters for her part.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
And so I was thrilled when I saw that because I was like, I need to mention this. If she doesn't mention it, I need to mention it.
That was more romantic than Duffy trying to do the say anything love proclamation to Maya. I'm like, oh no, that's romance right there.
Yes, 100%. Showing up for your loved one in a meaningful way. Hi, thank you. Mm. Yes.
Yep.
Gemma lays next to Quentin on the couch, snuggling into his arms. Half asleep, he slings his arm around her, and we realize maybe he's not so bad after all. Aww. Mm-hmm.
The next day, Maya is dressed to the nines to meet Ted. Ainsley intercepts her before she leaves and accuses her of looking too hot for him. But Maya argues, why can't I look hot when I tell him to go to hell? Ainsley doesn't buy it because she's wearing a pratted bra.
Oh, a pratted bra.
Pratted bra. It's wow. More than padded. It's pratted.
That's what you wear when you go to, like, really pick up on somebody, is a pratted bra. It's not just a padded bra. A padded bra is just so your nips don't show when you're, like, out and about. Oot and boot.
Pratted is protruding and padded. So
yes.
Not only do they encompass, but they also push out. Anyways. But Maya insists that she just needs to figure out what's going on before she goes back to D.C. Ainsley, with no selfish intent, suggests why not just stay in London? Huh? All your friends are here, and I know you love it here, so why go back? It seems like a pie-in-the-sky fantasy until later that afternoon when Maya is sitting at a posh restaurant and Ted is late.
Okay, wait.
Hmm?
That building is immaculate and beautiful and gorgeous, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I looked it up.
Okay.
Because I had to.
Of course you did.
It's a free contemporary art gallery in London's Kensington Gardens, and the super posh modern building was designed by a really cool female architect. Dame, you know that she's like, because she got fucking knighted or whatever. Dame Zaha Hadid.
So is it a art gallery or is it a restaurant? Or do they just use the outside as the restaurant, but it's actually an art gallery in real life?
I don't know if it's like an art gallery that has a bar component to it, mm-hmm. or if they just duded out a portion of it to make it look like a bar. But yeah, I was like, I need to go there. That building is fucking gorgeous. I'll see whatever art they have in there. Thank you very much.
Yes, we'll go. We'll live with Ainsley. It'll be perfect.
Yeah, in her fucking posh ass house. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Did Ted stand Maya up? No. Instead of Ted showing up, it's Liz, Ted's wife. Maya is appalled to see her and nervously asks, what are you doing here? Liz explains that she was on a whirlwind Save Our Marriage European tour, which she thought was going great until she caught Ted texting Maya.
Wow.
Maya apologizes, saying, I didn't mean to fall in love with Ted. But Liz shuts that shit down and reminds her that she doesn't get to play victim. And then Liz lays out her carefully formulated plan, which is she will stay in the marriage with Ted until their youngest turns 18, and at that time she will take Ted for all of his money and do a Grace and Frankie thing with her best friend. But until that time, she plans on staying in the marriage and does not want her kids embarrassed again by another cheating scandal. Maya blurts out an awkward apology and assures her that she will end things with Ted immediately, but Liz tells her no, do not have any contact with my husband. No letter, no call, no meeting for coffee for closure, just disappear. Maya nods slightly as Liz gets up before bestowing some last words of advice, which are, I know this is mostly Ted's fault, but in the future, don't sleep with another woman's husband and don't build your life around a man. And then briskly walks away, leaving Maya dumbfounded. I do have to say that there was a very funny interaction between the poor waiter that's trying to wait on these two women as they're having this like fucking intense conversation. So he just comes by, oh ladies, hey, I'm gonna be helping you, my name's Steven. And they're like, leave now, bring us wine, we don't care.
I literally wrote underneath at the end of your segment, hey, gal pals, can I get you something?
Yes, because that's what Steven said. And they say, wine, just wine. Ooh, liquid lunch. Okay, fun. And then scoots away. And then every time he tries to come and interact with them, they're like, just get away now.
Leave the liquor and go.
Yes, yes.
Later that evening, Cash's conversation with his old friend at the lame house party has inspired him to make his way to Ainsley's house. He finally wants to come clean. Ainsley answers the door and Cash apologizes. I'm sorry I didn't come sooner, but I'm here now and I want to explain why I couldn't marry you. She curtly responds, before you give me a bullshit apology, my Texan relative gave me a gun for a wedding present. Cash looks at her sincerely. I'm not here to apologize. I'm here to explain why. And if you think I've wasted your time, you can shoot me. I didn't marry you because the person you dated is a lie. I didn't like where I grew up, so I reinvented myself. And what I landed on was this. He gestures to himself and Ainsley tersely responds, an asshole. Mm. And Cash agrees, yeah, kinda. When I went to uni, I dropped all of my old friends and pretended I liked municipal bonds and got engaged to a beautiful, funny American girl who I didn't believe would have been interested in the first guy. I'm a massive fraud and I'm so sorry I didn't figure this out until the day of our wedding. At the end of his speech, she is a little teary-eyed and admits, I thought our relationship was perfect, but looking back on it, I was wrong. I realized I actually don't know you all that well. But I didn't care. I liked the fake guy that you were talking about. She holds up a finger and ducks back into her house. Does she get a gun? No. No, she does not.
Does she get body-scented body wash?
Yes, she got the body-scented body wash that she kept because it reminded her of him. Because now that she has an explanation, she doesn't need to hold on to the memories of fake Cash. She hands it to him and he says, I'm sorry. She responds, you should be, and quietly closes the door. On the way home, Cash runs into Maya, who's still raw from the encounter with Liz. He tries explaining that he talked to Ainsley, but she cuts him off. You owed Ainsley an apology, not me, and walks the fuck off, leaving him dumbfounded on the street.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that cut him deep. You can tell.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, wait, are we going to be cool now? Everything's fine? No? Okay, bye.
Well, and it's weird, too, because before the wedding, when Cash was in the room and Maya ran into him and she let him know that she and Senator McCheaty Pants Ted are no longer together.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like almost this switch flipped, like where before he'd been waffling. And when he found out that she was no longer entangled with Senator McCheaty Pants, he was like, oh, I really can't get married now. And that was like, ooh.
Oh. Oh, the tangled web we weave.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Meanwhile, in Duffyland, he's at Craig's house, hanging out and brooding. Craig brings him a plate of nachos, which Duffy takes and promptly dumps off the balcony. I was livid.
What?
He said it so quick. He's like, hey, Duffy, I made nachos. It's got cheese and the jalapenos and everything, salsa on it. And he hands it to him, and Duffy just chucks it over the fucking balcony.
Duffy, you need to leave this TV show right now, because how dare you do that to nachos? Who's going to be interested in
you? A crime against nachos. A crime against nachos.
That was a serious crime against nachos. You know what, gentle listeners? Tamara and I do not date people who do crimes against nachos.
Yep. Craig is surprisingly cavalier at this because he's just like, what the hell? And then Duffy confronts him. But if I was Craig, I'd be like, first of all, you're going to go in there and you're going to make me another plate of nachos. Second of all, you're going to go downstairs and clean up that shit that you just dumped over the side.
Seriously.
Anyways, Craig's full of what the fuck when Duffy confronts him. Do you have a thing for Maya? What was that M necklace for? Craig is surprised that his friend knew about the gift, and when asked about it, Duffy backpedals, and doesn't divulge that Zara told him. Instead, he concocts a ridiculous story about how he was going through Craig's closet to find his clothing size for future birthdays.
Huh.
Craig tells his friend that the necklace is not for Maya and encourages Duffy to forget about Maya because it's making him crazy. Duffy reluctantly agrees. Well, first he fights it, but then he reluctantly agrees. And the next day at school, when he sees Tabby, he asks her out for drinks. Tabby's a little salty, understandably so, from the last letdown, and tells him that she's got a serious boyfriend since she last saw him, a.k.a. 3 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Duffy realizes that this is a slight and says in perfect French, damn it, why did I give myself the French part?
I was laughing at that so hardcore!
He says, I'm not going to say it in French because I was hoping to stick it to Corinne and it just backfired on me. I learned conversational French for you and now you have a boyfriend. This impresses Tabby and she tells him, well, if that's the case, since you learned French for me, maybe I'll have to kill my serious boyfriend off. He asks her hopefully, is that a date then? And she says, maybe. Oh, Tabby, good on you for being coy.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Craig meets Julia back at the museum in regards to the paperwork and tells her, Molly's my daughter too, and I know I wasn't supposed to meet her, but I did. Julia gets defensive and tries to leave, but Craig stops her and pleads his case, explaining, I could be a great dad, I love golf, have dad jokes, and I even use Rogaine. Okay, dude.
Rogaine. Nothing says daddy like Rogaine.
Uh-huh. Yeah, your dad, so much Rogaine usage. My dad, so much Rogaine usage, twinning. Neither of our parents used Rogaine. At least,
no.
I mean, I can't speak for your dad, but I know my dad is a no on that front.
My dad had an illustrious head of hair.
He
was, what, half Native American? Those people don't lose their hair.
Yeah, he had a glorious mane of hair on his head.
Mm-hmm.
It's where Tamara gets her luscious locks from.
Mm-hmm. And my sister, too. My sister has 6 times more hair than I do.
What? Really? Wow.
That's what her hairdresser said one time when I went. She has her cousin Katie that does her hair regularly because she gets it dyed fairly often. And so I stupidly said, oh, yeah, do I have a lot of hair, Katie? Because people tell me I have a lot of hair. And she goes,
you do.
Oh, yeah, you have a lot of hair. You have, like, enough for 2 people. She goes, but your sister has enough for, like, 6 people. I'm like, of course, wah, outdone by my sister again.
Of course, Denise does.
I know.
Gentle listeners, Tamara's sister Denise basically looks like a Barbie doll. I'm just gonna say that.
Yes, my sister and my relationship's like me pulling up in a speedboat, being like, look at my speedboat. And my sister pulling up in a yacht, being like, oh, is this better?
Yeah.
Because everything that I've ever done, I'm like, look at me. And she's like, oh, look at this. Damn it. 6 times more hair. But I love her and she deserves everything that she has because she's a wonderful woman and she works hard.
Oh, 100%. She is a glorious human being. And mm-hmm. I am so glad that you have her for a sister.
Me too.
Because, you know, my sister's dead.
It's funny because we were watching Hillbilly Elegy last night because I was telling Larry about how J.D. Vance was nominated as Trump's vice president.
Yeah.
And then Hillbilly Elegy happened to come up on Netflix. And I was like, oh, I read the book. I want to see that. Yeah. So we were watching it and he was asking me, he's like, I know that we both had hard childhoods and we've kind of came out it in like with different perceptions. He's like,
yeah.
So how did you get out of your situation without being bitter or angry? And I was like, oh, well, first of all, a lot of perspective because, you know, I saw both sides of things. I had really, really good relationships and really, really good experiences and really, really bad ones.
Yeah.
So I knew that not everything was bad. And I had a kick-ass sister that looked out for me.
Yeah. I think that, like, our sisters were, slash, for you, are, because she's very much alive, some of the most influential people in our lives.
Yeah, I would say so. Yep.
Meanwhile, Craig meets Julia back at the...
Rogaine.
Rogaine, thank you. Oh, wow. We really did get off a tangent. Julia counters, it's not about you. It's about Molly. Craig agrees, producing the folder with the custody paperwork, hands it to her stating, I know it's about Molly, which is why I signed these. And I was like, what the fuck? Why the fuck did you sign over your parental rights, dude? I would not. I would not.
Well, I think I tried to outline his thought process.
Yes, yes.
I wouldn't have done it either, though. Just a side note, I would have been like, yeah, no, I'm not signing these, bitch. I didn't know you were pregnant, and you don't get to dictate the relationship that I had no idea was actually, like, a thing. So,
yes.
No.
Yes. Craig continues, so if you don't want me seeing Molly, I won't. But I do want to be part of her life. You know her best, and I trust you to make the right decision. I don't trust you to make the right decision, Julia. Julia, you did not tell him you were fucking pregnant and then blamed him for not spending time with your child because he didn't fucking know.
Coin, ease down. Ease it down, Corinne.
I don't have a crazy look in my eyes. I'm fine.
You do. It's scaring me. Now you're gritting your teeth and it's even worse.
Julia is grateful and thanks him before he hands her the troublesome blue Tiffany box with the M necklace and asks her to give it to their daughter if she wants it. Little do both of them know that behind a corner lurking is Zara. Once Zara sees the necklace exchange hands, she pounces, loudly confronting them. I knew you were cheating, she looks at Julia. Homewrecker! Julia smartly hustles the fuck away while Zara focuses her rash on her wrath on her cheating bull. Her rash. You gave me this rash! You did this to me, Craig!
Possibly from the body scented body wash. I don't know.
Oh, yes, yes. You just want some smartly dressed bird, not somebody who got fired from Topshop for abusing an employee discount, Zara says. Craig finally calms her down enough to explain, I'm not cheating. I have a daughter. This quickly diffuses the situation and causes many more questions like, she's your daughter, but she's so old. And once that's cleared up, she softly asks, why didn't you tell me? We're a team. Zara and Craig. Zreg! Craig affirms, we are Zreg. I just wanted to run it by Maya before I told you. Zara is pissed. I'm sorry. You told Maya before me? I should be the first person you tell those things to. What am I? Just a fit bird with beautiful teeth and fake boobs for you to wear on your arm? We don't have a real relationship. And she walks off in a huff.
In a huff.
Leaving Craig confused and heartbroken on a stuffed leather couch.
Yeah, because if you're going to your best friend with information that you should be sharing with your girlfriend, of course there's going to be heart feelings when she finds out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
100%. And fucking Maya, each time Craig spoke to Maya, which is like two different times about the whole situation, she was like, Craig, you need to tell Zara. You need to ask Zara about like her feel. Like, you need to talk with her about this. Fucking Craig, man.
Just like Duffy was telling Zara, talk to Craig. If you have like suspicions, approach him and blah, 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 blah. These people are just dense. They're getting knocked down a few notches on the relationship scale.
Well, I would actually say, for once, something wise came out of Duffy's mouth. Thank you for pointing that out.
No problem. Later that evening, Maya is sitting on a bench contemplating her life. In spite of Liz instructing her not to have contact with Ted, we see Maya writing him a letter. She states that 8 years ago, when all of her friends moved to London, she stayed behind. At first, she thought it was for her career, but eventually she realized it was for him. But now she knows that she's not going to waste any more time living for him, that now she has to live for herself. Once she's done, she goes across the London Bridge and says, goodbye, Ted, before tearing the letter in half and throwing it into the river. But she's caught by a policeman who says, oi, why are you throwing rubbish in the river? When she apologizes, he realizes that she's American, which makes perfect sense because we're slobs. She walks back to Ainsley's house, where Ainsley is marveling at all of the apology notes that Gemma has finished. Ainsley is hugging the envelopes, declaring, what a good friend you are, Gemma, right before Maya barges in and declares, I've decided I'm staying in London. I know I only have 3 pairs of underwear and it sounds crazy, but this is where I need to be. Ainsley is ecstatic and gets champagne.
because she agrees that this is exactly where Maya needs to be. Mm-hmm. They both file towards the kitchen while Gemma trails behind them, trying to politely suggest all the bad things about London and try to talk Gemma out of it, like Brexit and the fact that you have to order water at a restaurant and the streets are full of cobblestones. You'll break an ankle. Clearly not wanting to share her bestie, Ainsley, with someone on this side of the pond. The end.
Yay!
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Okay, Corinne, now you get to lead the dry kiss relationship ratings.
So let's talk about relationships, baby. Let's talk about Craig and Zari. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that can be. Let's talk about relationships. So, let's just start off with fucking Craig and Zara, because there were some moments.
Yes.
What do we rate the relationship?
I want to give it a one, but I do have to say that I was surprised at the tenderness and the acceptance that Zara showed when she found out that Craig was a father. Like, that saves it from a one and brings it up to a soft two, because you see what the potential of their relationship could be.
Yeah.
If they were just clear and communicated with each other, it could be a beautiful thing, but they will not get out of their own way to make that happen.
Yeah.
So there's all this like mystery and secrecy and intrigue that's just convoluting the love that they could have for each other. And it's just right now they're a two. They're close to a one and barely a two, and they need to get their shit together.
And I say two too. I also think I give Zara big props, because she, well, yes, she should have asked him about the fucking necklace.
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree. When she found out that he talked with Maya about this and like just left things so long, it wasn't just like he talked to Maya and then he came to her directly. I mean, there's like fucking years or whatever in between, what have you.
He was reserving those important conversations for Maya.
Yes.
Like, he was like, I need to talk to Maya about this, not you.
Yes. And she's saying to him, hey, I thought we were a team first and foremost, and you're not acting like we're a team, and you're having really important, intimate conversations with somebody else. I'm out. And I was like, you go, Zara. You do your thing. Like, she went up several notches for me when she did that.
Yeah. I think it showed like the emotional maturity that the two have. Like, I think in spite of the bad communication, Zara has way more emotional maturity than Craig. Like, Craig obviously doesn't know what it is to have a partner. And perhaps he thought, being a playboy, like, hey, I invited you to move in with me, we're living together, like, that's the epitome of commitment, instead of like actually putting the work into it.
Yeah. All right, so next we have our triangle, Cash and Ainsley.
I can't even say that Cash and Ainsley have a relationship now. That's like, it's non-existent. It's a zero.
And Cash and Maya.
Oh, God. Whew. That's right now, I want to say like a negative one.
Yeah, their relationship is like a low point right now.
And it's rightfully so, because Maya is doing the smart thing, because she realizes she's reeling from this altercation that she had with the senator's wife. And she's realizing, like, playing with fucking taken people and people that are already in relationships is not the way to go. So I am just going to duck out and yeet right out of here.
But I will say that when they were... when the two of them were watching Mastermind with the rest of the family, once again, you felt their connection, and it was just like magnetic.
Yeah.
So I give them a solid one. I give them a solid one.
I think I was speaking more on how the episode ended versus the whole thing. So
yeah.
I would agree with you there. Like, it started at a one and ended for me at a negative one, because I can fully see them not having any other conversations. Like, Cash is not in Ainsley's world. Maya realizes the errors of her way and probably will not fuck around with that if she's smart. Like, this is too fresh. This is my bestie's, like, ex. I don't want to play around with that. So, like, they could very well part ways and never see each other again, and it would be very believable.
Yeah. Maya and Senator McCheating Pants. Ted.
Cash and Senator McCheney pants. Man, that is the deep love story that nobody knows about.
It's kind of like the Republican National Convention and how it, like, it busted out Grindr.
Oh, my God. Fuck that guy. Seriously. The senator is a piece of shit. That one is negative 1,000 because not only is he bugging the fuck out of Maya, who doesn't want anything to do with him, so he's still trying to string her along and throwing the breadcrumbs in the water like, I still love you, I just want to talk. He's doing that while he's with his wife in Europe under the guise that they're trying to fix their relationship.
You know he decided to go to London fucking intentionally.
Oh, for sure. And his poor wife.
Yeah.
Man, I don't want to see any more of that in any of the future episodes. That guy can fuck, unless he dies. That might be a nice little spin on the story if he passes away.
That's the funeral.
Oh my God, yes.
Senator McCheety Pants Ted. Yeah, maybe we should be talking about Maya and Liz's relationship, because Maya never ends up seeing Senator McCheety Pants. However, he does not inform her the reason why he's in fucking London. Well, it's actually because of her is the reason. But the guise as to why he's in London, he does not inform her that he's getting back together with his wife. So, like, when she shows up, in spite of the fact that, yeah, they had a relationship that they shouldn't have had, she thinks he's separated from his wife. She thinks that he's a free agent. So, like, she's meeting with him under more open terms. And yeah. I am surprised that she didn't explain that to the wife. However, Liz...
I can understand you might be a little bit, when you see her and it throws you off, like, what you want to say. Because I would be like, just sit here quietly and don't make any sudden moves. Especially after you find out what a fuckhead he is. And that he was telling his wife something different than he was telling you. Like, I would just be like, no, don't make any sudden movements.
Well, for all we know, she doesn't know about their relationship with each other. I don't know, maybe she does, or maybe she had a feeling, but I'd just be like, I'm sorry, I thought he was available now. I did not realize that you two were on a rekindling relationship. He just reached out to me. Let's fuck Senator McCheety Pants Ted, but not in a sexy way together. Like, you know.
Yeah. I think it was really telling and very sad what Liz said when she left, which was like, you know, don't fuck somebody else's husband, which is a granted, but then also don't build your life around a man, because if you do that, then you're stuck. Yeah. And then when you should leave and you can't, because you need to support him and his career and your kids and this life that you built, and you have to be miserable the whole time while you're doing it.
Yeah.
Was like a poignant and very sad moment.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully Maya will learn from this and be like, oh yes, ding, 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 ding. Do not get with the senator.
For real. Okay. Duffy and... Wait, no. That was last episode, I think.
Did well, we... Duffy no, no, no. and Maya.
What?
Duffy has said that he's going to get over Maya and move on, which thank God for that. Because honestly, that's like a little tittering... Like I said last time, like a little sideline love situation that really doesn't need to happen. Like, I don't remember if anything comes about from Duffy's feelings.
Yeah.
I don't think it does, but you're just like, oh, good. Thank God that's over.
Yeah.
Move on, Duffy.
And potential of Duffy and Tabby.
Too soon for me to say, like, I like Tabby's tenacity. I like how she's like, oh, you know, I was interested in you last week, but when you just shut me down in such a kind of cold manner, I don't know if I want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Because if you can't smell what I'm cooking, then maybe I don't need to be in the same kitchen as you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I hope, I have high hopes, but as we've learned, Duffy is dense and we don't know if he's going to muck that up, like, or just have lingering feelings for Tabby for 10 years and not move on it.
Oh my goodness. Fucking Duffy. Fucking Duffy. Hey. Any relationships I'm missing?
I want to say that Ainsley and Tony too.
The newest relationship on the block. Yes.
Yes. Her gay assistant, Tony too. I see great things for them. He is wise. He is no nonsense, and he will tell it like it is. So I hope there's much, much more of him in future episodes.
Yes. Quentin and Gemma.
Oh gosh, yeah. This was the quintessential little moment where I'm like, you guys were off my radar and I didn't even want to discuss your relationship until he did that beautiful, lovely thing of filling out those handwritten apology letters for Gemma, who is doing it for Ainsley.
Yeah.
And he knew how important it was. And although he seemed very flippant and like, I'm going to do me and I don't care about what's going on with you, deep down he did, because he knew that she needed to get it done, that she was short on time, and how important it was to her, and did it without her asking. And when he could have been at the pub watching snooker or whatever the hell he wanted to watch.
Right. And I think there's really something to be said for, I mean, mind you, it's nice when your words and your actions align, but I would much rather be with a guy who had not the best words, but great actions, versus the guy who has the greatest words and like fucking no actions. Okay.
Yeah. I think I'm going to give their relationship as it is 4 dry kisses.
I'm going for 3 dry kisses. Yeah.
I think I'm giving it a notch more because it was just so surprising when I was like, oh
yeah.
Like, acts of love is my love language, or acts of service.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Yes. It might go down, but that pushed it up multiple steps.
Not mentioned in this script was a point, though, when their child was home from boarding school and he looks at his son and he says, oh, you're here. I didn't realize you're here. And Gemma's like, he's been home for 2 days. And he's like, oh, okay. Nice to see you.
Yes. Okay. Back down to a 3. I forgot about that point. Back down to a 3. Okay, relationship with Gemma, maybe 3.5. Relationship with his son, 2.
Oh, yeah, 2. Definitely. Oof.
And then also the fact that he always is like, I can't help it. I was overserved. Well, you know what you can do? You can put the drink down.
There's
something called rejecting the drink. You don't have to take it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
He overserved
his relationship with drinks is 5.
Yeah, his relationship with drinks is 5. My opinions on his relationship with drinks is a 1. Yeah.
As for the 4 Musketeers of Diversity, all the same players are here, except now we have sexual diversity because there was the 2 gay assistants.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for that.
Everything else stayed the same.
The 2 gay assistants and Tony, too, who is the best of the 2 gay assistants, is black. Mm-hmm. So
why he's not Tony 1, I don't understand, because he's better than Tony 1.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was a conversation where they're both like, I want to be Tony 1, I want to be Tony 2. And Tony 2 was like, it's really not that important to me. So fine, if you want to be number 1 and it's going to make you feel good, go right ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Because he seems like that kind of guy.
Yeah, no, Tony 2 knows how to prioritize, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He knows, he's like, this, not important. I'm going to save my energy for something that is.
Exactly.
Yes. Tony 2's the man I want to date. Okay. What movie do we have coming up next week, Tam?
We have the same series, but part 3.
Okay, so once again, we are wrapping things up. And if you have anything you'd like to say to us about relationships and Duffy, are we too hard on him? No, no, we're not. Are we too hard on him? You let us know. You can email us at OneDryKiss or reach out to us on Instagram or Facebook, all at OneDryKiss.
And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. Woo!
Pressing record.
Cord. Doom, doom, doom.